I'm David Schreiner Kahn, and this is Smashing the Plateau. No matter how successful you are, there's probably at least one area where roadblocks are keeping you from fully achieving your goals. Fortunately, you've come to the right place. Every expert I interview on this podcast is different, but they all have one thing in common. They know how to fix problems that keep people stuck. Today, I'm pleased to welcome Ruth Sherman. Ruth is an entrepreneur and a speech and media coach. She is a former faculty member of the Women's Campaign School at Yale University. Ruth has coached hundreds of candidates, business leaders, and celebrities. Ruth has been quoted in the New York Times, National Journal, Wall Street Journal, New York Post, and has appeared on ABC, CBS, MSNBC, CNBC, Fox, and the BBC. Ruth is also the author of Speakrits, the 30 best, most effective, most overlooked marketing and personal branding essentials. Ruth, welcome to the show. It's great to have you on.
Thanks, David. It's wonderful to be with you.
So I wondered if we could start off by you just talking a little bit about your journey, because it's kind of an interesting niche that you have. And I wondered if we can start off by you describing how you got to be in the place where you are and why.
I started off, David, as a performing artist. So I was trained as an opera singer. That was my undergraduate training, and came back to New York. I was born and raised in the New York metro area, so came back after college, after being at college music school in the Midwest, and started to ply my trade, started auditioning, and I realized that I wanted to make money, and you really was having a hard time doing that as a theater artist, you know, doing the auditioning for Broadway and off-Broadway, and I made some inroads in that, but I did discover that there was a way to make very good money by doing studio work, and I had all the skills to do that, so I ultimately became a jingle singer, and I sang jingles that were heard all over the world for Coca-Cola, for, oh my gosh, for Michelob, for, is that even still in existence anymore? I never see any commercials for that. McDonald's, Burger King, you know, you name it, I sang it. And that lasted for about a dozen years, and then that business started to change, and I knew I had to find something else to do, because I, even though I had a young child at that by then, I wasn't going to go back to auditioning for theater, and I decided that I needed to find, I had an obligation to provide an income for my family. That was very clear for me. And I also wanted to keep working. And so I looked and looked and looked, and I cried and cried and cried, because theater and music and singing and performing were really the only things that gave me a sense of self-worth. And I knew I'd have to find another way to sing, which was something that was suggested to me by a very good friend at the time. And so I explored a number of different professions, law and social work among them, and I found in looking very deeply into them was that these people, these professionals, very smart people who were very good at their subject matter, they were subject matter experts, were very bad at commanding a room. And I thought, ah, oh, this is something where I could add some value. So that's where my current business was born. That was over 20 years ago. And so I decided at that point to use all of my skills that I had learned as a performing artist, picking up the phone and calling people until somebody finally didn't ask the magic question, which was, have you done this before? And I didn't have to say no and get the hang up. Well, you know, never mind. And somebody finally didn't ask that question. And that's where it started. I got my first piece of business from a major law firm in New York City. And it was, I just built it from there. And over the years, my focus has narrowed. So now I work almost always with CEOs, C-level executives, those who are in the top spot, want to be in the top spot, are ready to be in the top spot, and celebrities, movie stars, people who are, you know, famous or who are on the cusp of fame. And I help them all put their best foot forward publicly.
You know, it's interesting, Ruth, how you sensed a change that was taking place in the market and managed to identify a niche that worked for you, which is something that business leaders have to go through, you know, fairly frequently. because things shift, not just internally, but also externally.
Absolutely. And, you know, the it was very clear to me, and this is part of the problem, I think, with show business and with business in general. Quite honestly, we hear a lot about age discrimination, for example. I'm sure you see a lot of it. I see a lot of it with my clients. But even in the, especially in show business, you get weeded out very early. I mean, I was watching colleagues of mine who had reached the peak of their skills. I mean, they were at the best they had ever been, being not getting work anymore, not getting as much work as they approached the age of 40. This was mainly women as they approached the age of 40, and men not much longer than that, and very young people coming up. Not that they weren't any good, they were. But, you know, there's a level of experience and wisdom that gets lost when businesses, whether it's show business or conventional businesses, start losing or start stop working with that wisdom. That, you know, they lose a lot of that, what do we call it, just that sort of institutional intelligence. So, but I saw it. It was clear. And I was, that wasn't going to be me. So, you know, I had to find something else. So, yeah.
So when you're faced with that kind of situation going on in the marketplace, where you know that there is reluctance to invest in your skills as you become more experienced and have more wisdom, how do you have the fortitude to have the persistence that you had to keep calling potential clients till things start to stick?
Yeah, it's not easy, as you probably know. I had a lot of support. I had a lot of help. And that's something that I have done from the beginning. When things weren't going right for me, and I finally would attribute it not to a lack of, not to a preponderance of bad luck, but to something I personally was doing incorrectly, that I was getting in my own way, I would reach out for help, whether that was, you know, for therapist or for a business coach. I have always had support. Plus, I was very fortunate to marry a man who did have a 9-to-5 job and was able to get us over the rough spots. So the times when I was shifting, it wasn't as if we were going to starve, and so that was super important. The other thing that I will say about him was that, it continues to be the case, that he always says yes to me. So when I say, you know, I need to invest in myself in this way, and it's going to cost X amount of money, I need to throw this much money back into the business, he always says, do what you have to do, do what you want, do what you think is going to make sense. And so he's always been a great cheerleader for me. But I guess the bottom line is that always getting the help I need, getting a third party to look at things objectively, because it's very difficult when you're in the throes of it to look at things objectively and to say, look, here's where you're screwing up and here's what you can do to make things better. And, you know, also to in terms of fortitude, I'm a tenacious bitch. I mean, that is what I am. My children will affirm that. My husband will affirm that. And my friends and my personal contacts will all affirm that. I just don't give up. I'm a pit bull. And I always had a vision, a fantasy, if you will, that I could do certain things. And I never really let go of that. I still don't. I still don't. That's it for me. That's how I get through. That's how I keep picking up the phone. Do I get bummed out and depressed and, you know, want to just throw it all out? Sure, of course. And it happens fairly regularly, as it does for most entrepreneurs, most business people. But you go on. And the good things happen, and they make it possible to keep going.
Well, you know, you mentioned two major roadblocks that are very common for entrepreneurs. One is the need for emotional and tactical support, and the other is the need for working capital.
Yes.
To get us through the rough spots.
Yeah, very, very astute observation and a very good way to put it in more business-like terms. So certainly the emotional support, which I mentioned, which were, you know, my family, my therapists over the years, and then the tactical support, which is the business coaching and people who understand business, taught me how to read a financial statement, know what to keep, what to get rid of, where to spend money, where to invest, where to stop investing, and when to shift tactics. So very important indeed.
Yeah. So really, I wonder if we could talk a little bit about your own expertise, or your own expertise in working with leaders on their presentation skills. Where do you see places that leaders can make some changes and make some improvements? Maybe you can offer some tips, especially when their company seems to have hit a plateau.
The fact is, David, that these skills, I've been around a long time. I've seen a lot. I wouldn't say I've seen it all, although sometimes I do say that. But I've seen a lot. And I will tell you this, it seems like if you're out there and you're doing your business, you've got a lot of competition, it may seem to you like everyone is out there doing presentations, they're speaking, they're doing media, you're doing podcasts. A lot of people are doing podcasts now and getting themselves out there in that way. And those are wonderful things to be able to do. I characterize these things as the greatest marketing and personal branding tools no one wants to use. Because the fact is, David, that most people will not do what you're doing, what their competition is doing. They won't do the work necessary to get out there and speak and grab the attention of larger audiences. They'd prefer to go at it one-on-one, day after day, and that is simply not an efficient use of time. Not saying that there's no place for that, but it's not an efficient use of their time. I mean, if somebody asked me whether I'd rather spend an hour speaking to one person or an hour speaking to 500 people, my answer is clear. It's 500 people, no way around that for me. Now, is there a place for speaking one-on-one? As I said, yes, there is. But as I was saying, this is the greatest marketing and personal branding tool no one wants to use. So in terms of helping people work at this, the people who come to me are people who recognize that they are not going to make any more headway unless they nail down this additional marketing skill, the skill of being able to stand up in front of a group of people and speak in a way that engages them, that has them waiting in line after they're done. I call it the waiting in line test, waiting in line after they're done, patiently to meet them, to rub elbows with them, to exchange business cards in the hopes of doing business with them. And then those people, the audience, go back to their offices and they're thinking about what that person said and they're talking about what that person, that speaker, said to all of their colleagues. And that person, that speaker, is now getting many more opportunities to speak to other people and to, let's face it, get in front of a whole new audience of prospects and potential clients. It is a wonderfully efficient way to get out there, and anybody who wants to grow their business has to do this.
Why do you think so many people are afraid to do it?
They don't want to do the work. It's very hard work to get good at this. It's not, and it's just, they're not convinced. There's a few reasons. It's the work part of it. It's very difficult, as I just mentioned, to nail down the skills. It's not something that you can do in a one-day session with a speech coach or even a two-day session. It is really a skill that you have to learn little by little, apply over time. Not everybody comes at it naturally, but everybody who has the tools, and most people do, they have the voice, the body language, all of that stuff, you have it. You just need to learn how to master the technique and to manage the content and create content that engages and get out there and practice it, because it's the practice piece of it. And this is something that I bring to it, having been a performing artist for so many years, that it's the old saying, how do you get to Carnegie Hall? Practice, practice, practice. And a lot of people simply don't want to put the work in. A second reason is that they tend to look at these skills as fluff. they look at them as surface, as something that is, some people have it and some people don't. And if you don't have it, well, then you're just out of luck. And not only that, but again, it's they tend to characterize them as surface skills, as simply not something that is important. It's not the same as the technical skills, not the same as all that subject matter expertise that they've managed to learn and internalize after many years, after years and decades of working in a particular field. But the fact is, it is the vehicle to disseminate and to get out there that subject matter expertise. And they still haven't grasped how important that is. And the third reason for a lot of people is they're scared. They're scared of flopping. And I can guarantee them that in the first few times out there, you might not do as well as you will do after the 10th time of doing a talk. But most people who come to me after working with me, they're not going to flop necessarily, but it'll get better over time, and that is one of the things that I make sure that they know, that it's practice and tweaking and applying it, just like in any other skill, David.
Yeah, well, you know, they say that if you're not embarrassed by the first time you offer something, or by the first time you get up and speak, or the first time you do something, then you've waited too long to try.
There you go. I think that's a great way to put it.
Yeah. Ruth, I was wondering if you might be able to offer some tips on how to find your voice if you don't do a lot of presentations, or if you think that what you're doing now needs to be ramped up.
I think the first tip that I would offer, and this is something where a lot of people go wrong, is they wait until they feel that they have mastered their talk before they pick up the phone or they start reaching out to colleagues or online to book a gig. My advice is to book the gig first and worry about it later. You're not going to get an opportunity to speak the next day. And if you do, you just say, I'm booked. I can't do it. So most of the time, you're going to be calling people who really have opportunities for you months later. And so you've got plenty of time to get ready for your talk during the months that you, in advance of your speech. So book a gig, worry about it later. The second part is to make sure that you're not going to stand behind a podium and deliver a data dump of numbers and technical information. People who are in your audiences, as highly skilled as they may be, are still human beings, and they still really enjoy a good yarn. And if you are going to present information that is too technical, you're going to sound boring and scripted, and they're going to be bored, and they're going to turn you right off, and they're not going to be waiting in line to meet you at the end of your talk. And the third thing that I would absolutely say, and this is where continue my high level and busy clients continue to miss the boat, and which is why they get me on their calendar and pay me a lot of money, frankly, to be there, that they don't get back if they cancel their gig with me, their time with me, is to practice. And it is simply, there is simply no way to get better at this than to practice. And I'm not talking about sitting at your desk and going over it in your head. You have to say it out loud. You have to lock yourself in a room and say it out loud numerous times, because in your head, we all sound very eloquent. We're all very eloquent in our own heads. We don't imagine ourselves stepping up onto a stage or a platform and flopping. We imagine ourselves getting up there and, you know, blowing them away. And yet that rarely happens. You have to say it out loud to know how the words roll off your tongue, to activate the speech centers in your brain. This is really where things come into play, David. I love this piece of it for my own practicing. It's amazing to me how when I say things out loud, if I'm doing something new, that things come into my mind, pop into my mind, ways to say things, great kind of riffs on certain subjects that I never would have thought of had I been sitting at my desk just imagining how I was going to say it on a stage. So those three things, you know, booking the gig, practicing, and what was the third one that I said? I can't remember, but there were three of them all together. Sound like Rick Perry all of a sudden.
Ruth, do you think it makes any difference what kind of business you're in?
No.
What have been some examples of businesses where you've seen getting out there and being being in the public has made a difference in a business that people wouldn't expect would make a difference?
Well, I think technology is one area where we get a lot of people who are they call themselves geeks. So let's use that word. They are very highly valued for their technical skills. They are sitting there, they are programming, they are coming up with all kinds of new ideas about how to develop applications and software that help businesses make more money and do things more quickly and efficiently. But they don't necessarily think of themselves as business leaders who can inspire audiences, but we see it all the time, for example, in the TED Talks. So TED Talks have now become the sort of the bar, right? They've raised the bar in speaking. They've made speaking something that is super important. So one example, and I keep coming back to this, and I will tell you, I miss this person so much, not having worked with him, but having worked with this company. But Steve Jobs was probably the best example of a technical person getting out there and creating a company and letting people know through his speaking, his presentations, how valuable his products were going to be. We can look at him. There's an argument to be made whether he was too closely identified with the company. But when we look at how successful the company has been since his death, it goes to show you that what he started and what Tim Cook has continued and actually become better at. He was honestly not good to begin with, but he's gotten better. That Apple continues to be and is now, I think, the most valuable company on the New York Stock Exchange, if I'm not mistaken. So that used to be GE, by the way, but now it's Apple. So it's quite interesting. So you see that kind of a change. So certainly technical companies, medical companies, drug companies, drug CEOs, you don't expect them to be out there speaking. But healthcare is huge right now, and I've just actually gotten a call from a company that somebody who's looking to become the president of one of their divisions who knows, he's been told that if he doesn't get out there and master the intricacies of presentation, he's not going to get that job. So it's become much, much more important, even in technical fields that we wouldn't think, that we think is strictly technical, brain power, coming up with the latest drug, the latest healthcare item, the latest technology. But in fact, it's how you connect with people, David. It's how you know, how do you sell your stuff? How do you engage them? How do you get them excited about what it is you're doing?
Sure, because ultimately every buying decision is made by a person. Whether it's B2B or B2C.
That's right. And all of my clients, I shouldn't say all of them, but most of them, certainly on the CEO side, it's B2B. On the celebrity side, people are selling my celebrity clients, and I have Oscar-winning clients. And you would think these people are already good at the public presentation. But, you know, they're human beings just like the rest of us, and they're great at playing roles. They're not so good at being themselves, a version of themselves on TV, whether it's on the late shows or on the morning shows where they have to promote their films. It's in their contract where they have to get out there and promote their films or TV shows, etc. They have to get the butts in the seats, as we like to say. So they're selling tickets, and they have to get out there and promote. And it's not easy for them to be interviewed. And so everything that we teach the CEOs, we teach the celebrities as well about how to engage their hosts and their television audiences, which can, of course, be in the millions, not the hundreds or the thousands.
Ruth, I've spent a fair amount of time studying leadership and looking at leadership styles, and in particular the area of charisma and leadership. And I'm wondering whether you find that in terms of ability to communicate publicly, whether you can be compelling without being charismatic.
Oh, that's a really great question. I would say this about it. Everybody has a unique charisma. So I don't think there's a human being walking the earth who doesn't have something to say or a belief in something that they cannot say with a degree of passion and commitment that will engage a specific audience. I would say this too. Sure, there are people who were born with a personality type that lends itself more, that, you know, let's just say is or predisposed to have a level of charisma that other people don't. But when I'm sitting with clients, and clients who may be in the insurance industry, clients who may be in the industrial materials industry, these are not sexy industries, generally.
No. Nope.
Right? They're
not. Right. And we think of people who work in those fields as being pretty dry.
Yes, we do. Yet these people understand a business and know how incredibly necessary their materials and their services are to their client base. And when they are one-on-one or one in a small group or with their boards of directors, they are speaking in a way where they are trying to convey a sense of urgency and a commitment and a passion for what it is they're doing and a direction their companies should take. And there's no reason on earth why they cannot transfer those skills to a larger audience. And every time I get a client, I see a client who is in one of those positions, and I suggest it is time for you to get out there and be the industry leader by doing industry talks, going to your industry events and being the headliner, they suddenly, their eyebrows raise and they say, you know, you're right. You're absolutely right. This is how I become the go-to person. This is how I become the referral person. And, you know, so I don't believe there's anybody who cannot do it. I don't believe there's anybody who doesn't have a particular level of charisma that cannot be combined with their subject matter expertise. You know, there are techniques about this. It's like, look, one of the things that I like to compare it to is music. I come from a classical music background, and I was never great at piano. It was my minor. I was never great at it. But I learned to play Mozart sonatas. Was I going to become Mozart? No way. No way. But I could play Mozart sonatas. And I want to tell you, David, I can play them to this day. The fingers just know where to go. And I would say the same thing to my clients. You're not going to become necessarily a Steve Jobs when you're out there presenting. You're not necessarily going to become, you know, a Jack Welch or any of the others who are, you know, celebrity CEOs. But you are certainly going to gain mastery to a large extent that is going to be enough for you to engage your specific audience and for them to wait in line for you at the end.
Right. And I think what I'm hearing is if you know your passion, you can learn how to use it in your public voice.
Absolutely. And then by the time they get to this level, they know their passion.
Yeah, that's great. So Ruth, in your own journey, I know we talked earlier about the need for support. I wondered if you could talk a little bit about who may have been influential in you developing your own career.
You know, David, there were so many of them, but I would say that among the books that I have read, and voices among the books, there are a couple. One was when I was in graduate school and I was forced to read a lot of books. And, you know, it wasn't something that I was necessarily looking into doing. I was a big fiction reader at that time and I always read the newspaper. But one of the people that I was forced to read was a writer by the name of Kathleen Hall Jameson. And Kathleen Hall Jameson was a wonderful writer and author about communication. That was my major in grad school. I have a degree, a master's degree in rhetoric and communication. And Jameson wrote about how women's voices were generally valued as less than men's. And when I say voices, I'm not talking about the speaking voice, although that's part of it, but the way women communicate. And it really was an eye-opener for me. So that was certainly one influencer. Another influencer was Deborah Tannen, and she was one of the early writers in the 80s and 90s about, again, the communication differences between men and women. And of course, her books were popular, very popular at the time, but I would still recommend that people read these books. And so, these are important. Aside from that, I've had a number of, I mentioned earlier, therapists and coaches who have and continue to be influential for me. My current coach, Christopher Flett of Ghost CEO, is a tremendous voice and push to me to get out there and to gain the confidence. I think one of the things that a lot of women have, and I'm no exception, is we have what's called imposter syndrome. I think men have this too, but women are just more, we have it more, I think. We always are looking over our shoulders thinking, why did they call me for? What do they think I have that someone else doesn't? And so that continues to be something that I struggle with and something that I am happy to have Chris push me and go back to reading those authors that I mentioned a moment ago.
Yeah, I find actually that a lot of leaders have some level of imposter syndrome.
Yeah, I agree with you. I agree.
We're often our own worst enemy.
Yeah, and I don't know why it's attributed more to women than it is to men, but, I think men are just have a different way of communicating about it. Women are more open with each other, I think, about things like that, whereas men tend not to, display their weaknesses publicly.
Yeah, I think that's true. Ruth, I wonder if we could shift and talk a little bit about what you're working on now. What's exciting?
Oh, yeah. Well, my clients are always exciting. I am personally working on growing my speaking business. So that is one thing that I am very excited about, getting out there, doing more keynotes. And, it's funny, as a speech coach, one of the things that can happen is you get so busy training clients to do speaking, you're not out there doing the speaking yourself. But what I find is speaking is a journey. It never ends, by the way. And I guess business leadership and these kinds of skills never really do end. The journey is always there, which is what makes it so exciting. There's always something new to learn. And so getting out there and testing new ways of speaking, new storytelling, so new ways of titling presentations. What are the things that are going to grab audiences' attention? So putting out proposals for speaking, deciding how to price speaking, those kinds of things. You mentioned my new book, Speakrets, understanding how to package speakrets to present them during my speeches, to sell the books in bulk. So those are some new and exciting things that I'm doing that really weren't, that I didn't do with my first book, which was which was a great book too, but is now out of print. Speakrets, I don't intend to let go out of print. So working with my current clients, I have a new film that I'm working on. I'm not going to tell you the name of it yet, but there are actually two new films that will be, one is going to be premiering at the Toronto Film Festival next month. And then another film that opens in 2016. These are big films, big releases. So these are other things that I get to do, get to media train and coach the casts and crews of these films.
Wow, it all sounds exciting.
It is.
Ruth, who do you know personally who is doing really remarkable work?
There are a couple of great friends and colleagues of mine who are doing amazing work, and they have nothing but my admiration. The first one is my oldest friend, whom I've known since middle school, and her name is Peg Wright. And Peg Wright is the founder and CEO of the Center for Great Expectations in New Jersey, which is a nonprofit that helps disadvantaged women who are new mothers get on track when they want to have their babies. They have a facility that gives them beds and trains them to be mothers and to take care of their babies and hopefully to get the babies off to a positive start. And she's been doing that for probably as long as I've been doing this. So it's a tremendous thing that she's doing. And the other is another leader of a nonprofit, and her name is Fran Pastore, and she runs the Women's Business Development Center here in Connecticut, which is my home state, in Stamford, Connecticut, which is one of 50 women's business centers supported by the Small Business Education Small Business Administration, and they are an education center, and they train women and men to do all the important things in business, to start and grow businesses, which is a huge passion of mine. And I was on their board for a while, and I have spoken to them. And so, you know, these are the people who are making life possible for people who otherwise wouldn't have a chance. And they just have my undying admiration and support.
Wow, these are great examples. Ruth, how can listeners learn more about you?
Well, my website is ruthsherman.com. If they go there and they subscribe, they are going to get training videos. That's complimentary training videos right away. And I post blogs regularly. I send out newsletters once or twice a month on topics of interest to me. Right now, the big topic is the political campaigns. I'm an expert in political communication, and people will get to watch as I criticize from both sides of the aisle. I don't take sides, and it's important to watch. It's a masterclass in public speaking, and we don't want to miss that. If you want to learn more about speaking and communication, watch the candidates.
That's great. Ruth, we've had such a great discussion about how important it is to have your voice heard if you're a leader in business. Thank you so much for taking the time to come and join us today on Smashing the Plateau. My guest today has been entrepreneur, speech, and media coach Ruth Sherman. Thank you again, Ruth, for joining us.
Thank you, David. It was a pleasure.
You've been listening to Smashing the Plateau, the podcast produced by 10 Strategic Partners. Be sure to visit our website at smashingtheplateau.com. And join our email list to hear many more great interviews like this one. And if you like what you heard, please leave us a review on iTunes by going to smashingtheplateau.com/iTunes. I'm your host, David Schreiner-Kahn, and we'll be talking again soon.